know, with that coaching tree, I think right now, Charles Lee, NBA head coach, Will Hardy played for me at Williams, NBA head coach. You got Ryan Frazier, an assistant in Charlotte. You got Zach Thomas, assistant in Charlotte. You got DJ McClay, who's an assistant in Boston. You got Nana Fallon, who's an assistant in Boston.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. How you doing today, bro? Let's do our weekly check-in on Utica and Alfred basketball. How's the season going? What you guys got going forward?
I'm doing well, bro. I'm actually leaving, going to New York City for Thanksgiving break after we film this. We have a couple of days off until our next game. But in terms of basketball is going well. I mean, we're pretty sure we're 5-1 right now. Pretty solid. I mean, we dropped a tough one to Ithaca, you know, solid program, great coaching. You know, we just kind of slipped out of our hands. But, you know, like I've been saying, just take every game as a tool to kind of get better and learn from your mistakes, whether good or bad. So definitely just keep building. Ready to, you know, come back after fall break and keep competing. But how are you guys doing over there?
Yeah, bro. I mean, recording like 10, 20 minutes right after the game, bro. We're really grinding. But we dropped. So last time we talked, we played. Yeah, so we dropped two in the last two games. We got, I'm not even going to say how much we lost by against Pitt Brad. And then we just lost by two to Hilbert. And I don't know, today, like, when I tell you practices were different all week, like, coach was not playing no games. Like, dudes were leaving practice, throwing up. Like, it was a rough week of practice. We were locked in going into this game. We started the game, we was down like 21 again. Like, we just can't keep doing that. And then came back like we always do. Down the stretch, I got the ball in my hands, I turned it over. So I take that on the chin and I'll try to flush it. I know I'm going to be, you know, fixing things throughout this break to try to get back to how I've been playing. But that one definitely hurts. I had to tell the guys in the locker room, that's on me, I'll be better. But life moves on at the end of the day. And, you know, basketball is not the end all be all, but we'll be back after Thanksgiving break ready to grind.
100%.
We got a pretty good episode for everyone. We got Coach Dave Paulson. Dave, the currently head coach at Holy Cross, but I mean, he's a legend and OG in the game. He's coached at Michigan, Cleveland State, Williams, the Division III level, Bucknell, George Mason, and now currently at Holy Cross. And that we talked about so much because his career is actually crazy. So I just want to hear, like, what you thought about this episode and talking with Coach Paulson.
Yeah, I think this episode is obviously a longer one, but I think the main thing that I feel like I learned a lot, like talking to him in that hour and a half, just like a little bit of gems, both on basketball and just like life stuff in general. I really appreciated just talking to him. But I think, like you said, like, he's an OG, like, he's been around for a minute. I mean, you know, he coached, like you said, he's been at every level. He's seen pretty much everything at this point. He's had NBA players, right? He's been to the NCAA tournament. He's won the national championship in D3. So it was honestly a great convo. And you know, I know you don't like the longer episodes, but I think for this one, just the amount of knowledge that he brought to us, I felt like, in terms of the basketball. And like I said, life knowledge too. Like, it was really good. And then I'm excited for the viewers to listen to this one.
Yeah, Ruta and I always have discussions on if we should cut episodes down because I like keeping it short. And Ruta's like, nah, if there's good knowledge, there's good knowledge, and you can't really cut content out. And there's tons of good knowledge in this, and not even just basketball. Like you said, like, there's a lot of life skills and things outside of basketball that, you know, Coach Paulson just grabs people's attentions. And it might not be like he said, he's not solving world hunger, but you learn so much just from like a conversation with the man. And you can see his impact on his coaching tree. His coaching tree, we talked about in the episode, but he's got two NBA head coaches that were, he's their mentor. He's got team or coaches that are leading teams to national championships and D3, D1. He's got some of the best coaches throughout all divisions, and they all, like, if you listen to some of their interviews, they talk about, well, Coach Paulson taught me this, or Coach Paulson connected me with this person. So he's just like really connected in the game, but also he has tons of insight that is extremely valuable for everyone to kind of take advantage of.
100%, man. I feel like, especially watching his, like, some of his teams in the past, like, I feel like they always have like one or two guys that you're like, damn, like this guy's a, like, it was like a diamond in the rough almost. And it's like, damn, they found how, where'd they find this guy? You know what I'm saying? So, like, I definitely appreciate that. Like, he probably has a really good, not probably, he has a really good eye for talent. But I like that he also takes risk with guys. He's like, they're not highly recruited right now, but I guarantee you, like, he was telling the story about Mike Muscala and how he's from Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, he saw him play and he was like, we have to offer this kid right now before a bunch of schools, like, mm-hmm, basically find out about him. Right. So it's like he clearly has an eye for talent. So to hear that part of how he's kind of built his recruiting, whether, you know, Tyler Kolek, right? Tyler Kolek kind of blew up with, he had a bunch of mid-major and low-major looks, but, you know what I'm saying? Regardless, like, he saw an eye for that. And now Tyler Kolek is hooping, and, you know, for my New York Knicks in the NBA, which is crazy to say. But yeah, bro, huge coaching tree. Coach Crotty, for example, right? Like, you know, that's a direct player. Crotty played for him at Williams. They won the Natty together, if I'm not mistaken. So it's like he got, and Coach Crotty is running one of the best AAU programs in the country right now. So yeah, great episode, bro. Like I said, excited for the audience to hear this one.
Nah, yeah. I mean, you talked about his like eye for talent, and this is something that we know, but like that I really think there's just something in Division III water or something, because when you coach at that level or play at that level, you can see, I think Paulson might have mentioned this, but you can see the guys that are actually like hungry to get better. You can see the guys that are willing to do the dirty work to eventually become successful. And he's the person that put Tyler Kolek on the map. He's the person that was willing to take a chance on Duncan Robinson when nobody wanted Duncan Robinson at that level. He's the person that, like you said, Mike Muscala, like a 12-year NBA career, because, you know, he was given that platform at Bucknell to just be a dog and put Bucknell on the map. And one thing that we didn't really get to talk about in the episode is like the Patriot. We talked a little bit, but the Patriot League back then when he was at Bucknell, like CJ McCollum versus Mike Muscala, those games and like that competition throughout the league must have been crazy. But there's just so much we could talk about with Coach Paulson. We talked a ton about with him about, you know, his Williams career, coaching and playing there, the success, winning the national championship, all of his coaching stops. You know, he's a funny guy too. Like, he was Coach Anderson. You got to listen to the part we were talking about you, because he was taking some shots. But I mean, it was a really good episode. There's so much to hear from, and I don't want to keep this too long. So enjoy the conversation with Coach Paulson. All right, we are here with the legend, Coach Paulson. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great, and you're the only person who calls me a legend, so I'm doing even better, KJ. Great to be on this podcast with you guys.
Yeah, definitely appreciate you getting on, Coach. What does Monday look like for you? What you been doing today? You coming off a 3-0 weekend? Like, what? Walk me through your day.
Today was a little different, yeah, because we play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Won at the buzzer. See, I almost feel like it was a loss because we did not play our best, but 1-3-0, which is great. Started three freshmen. But I was absolutely wiped out, you know, from the games, the prep, you know, you're up all night watching film, everything like that. Three games in 3 days, you know, took a toll. And so today was, we had the day off for practice. So, got up in the morning and worked out and got in. So didn't get in quite as early. And then just had a number of guys came in for treatment or shooting and just really getting a chance just to connect with guys for 3, 4, 5 minutes, just, you know, touching base on a couple of things that they did well or, you know, maybe what they didn't do as well or why they played down the stretch or didn't play down the stretch. Just a little bit, just kind of a casual 3 or 4 minute meetings. And then, And just tried to really watch really all of our defensive clips from the weekend. And so that was most of the afternoon. you know, watching our defensive clips for the weekend, and then we'll kind of turn our attention to our game on Wednesday, you know, starting tomorrow.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you guys won on a buzzer, and I want to hear from you. Like, so the game was crazy in itself, but also like the very last possession, it was you guys missed a shot, got the offensive rebound, and then kicked it out for a three, which ultimately was the hero shot. So I want to hear from you, like your thought process throughout that final possession, and like how much of a relief that final shot was.
Yeah, you know, we struggled again. 3 games in 3 days, we did not defend well. Like, we played really, really well to beat Brown on Saturday night. We played well to beat Sacred Heart. New Hampshire had lost to both those teams by double digit points. You know, and you know, that's one thing with a young team. You know, I know they saw those scores and like, oh yeah, we're going to be fine. And you know, one thing that you have to learn as you continue to emerge as a player is, you know, you got to respect the game. You got to respect every single opponent. And it's not like they didn't respect them, but you know, if you're just a half a step less intense, less focused on the defensive end, you know, then you could give up points. So it was a struggle the whole game. We went up 2. They pressed us. We threw a home run pass over the top. Our guy went up for a dunk, got fouled, missed both free throws. So now we're up 2. I think it was like 21 seconds to go. They called timeout. You know, we talked about what we wanted to do. We wanted to switch everything. But we also said in that timeout, I said, hey, if they score, take the ball quick, race it up the floor. We're not calling a timeout. Go right to the rim and attack, you know, and you know, I'll call the timeout if I need it. But just my philosophy is I would rather in that unsettled situation, you know, trust our players and trust them to get a good crack at the basket rather than let the defense settle. We got sloppy in a switch and gave up a 3. So we were down 1. And we raced it up the floor. Our point guard drove, shot a little bit of a floater. I thought he got hit, didn't get the call. That was our freshman point guard, Tyler Boston. And then our other freshman guard, who was named player of the week in the league after the efforts, got the offensive rebound. He's our leading scorer. And what I really loved about it is he didn't try to make the heroic play. He made the right play. He saw his teammate Aiden Richard open, and Aiden knocked down the 3 at the buzzer. And so it was a great end, you know, for our guys. They all celebrated. And I just kind of, to be honest with you, just breathed 4 or 5 sighs of relief to just get out of there, you know, with the win.
I just I have a quick question. Obviously, you love buzzer beaters and stuff like that. It's always cool to see those highlights, you know, the next day. But you talked about like coaching philosophies, like letting your players play at the end of games. And specifically, I'm wondering, when you're developing your coaching philosophies, do you feel like it's through trial by error? Like, you just see what works, or you just stick to one thing that you believe in and go through it?
Yeah, I think it's through you know, through experiences. I think it's watching, you know, like, I just love to watch a lot of games, you know, so not only just scouting, but, you know, tonight I was trying to do a little scout preparation, but, you know, I was flipping between American was playing at High Point and Colgate was playing at NC State. And, you know, just like watching games and just see those scenarios play out. You know, sometimes I feel like if the team looks really frazzled, then we're going to use the timeout. But more often than not, I think in that unsettled situation, a few years back when I was a coach at George Mason, UMass scored to tie the game up. And we had said the same thing. We're not taking a timeout, race it up. And a guy laid the ball in at the buzzer to win. And in fact, in that year at George Mason, we won 4 consecutive games on buzzer beaters. And one of the guys, Ian Boyd, had 3 of the buzzer beaters in a row. I've never had anything like that before.
He must have felt like the man.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was on ESPN, you know, at SportsCenter with Bucci Gross. And it was pretty cool. But, uh, But that, that just as a general rule, you know, especially when you're tied. I thought we were going to be tied. I didn't think we were going to give up the go-ahead three. But I liked, you know, what it looked like. I liked the disorganized setting of the defense. And, you know, I trusted our guys. And if we'd have missed the shot and not come away with the victory, you know, at the end we got two incredibly good looks. And that's all you can ask for with two really good players taking those shots.
Yeah, I mean – we got a lot to talk about your coaching career, which we'll get back to that. But I want to start at your playing career. And you went to Williams where, you know, the Williams teams you played for were really good. And you guys won an ECAC championship in 87. You guys were coached by a legendary coach in Harry Sheehy. And NESCACs weren't allowed to make the NCAA tournament until 1993, I believe. So you guys won the ECAC, but you weren't able to compete in the NCAAs. So one, I want you to just talk about, you know, your team that year, the run you guys had, but also how it felt in the locker room knowing you guys couldn't really compete for the biggest postseason play.
Yeah, again, like at that time, so Harry Sheehy was my coach, and his first year was my freshman year at Williams. And the Williams basketball program had always been, you know, solid, but not great. And the first 3 years we were, you know, maybe a little bit more than solid, but still not great. You know, the program really took off, you know, after I graduated. And it was a combination of improved talent as Coach Sheehy was there longer, as he kind of built his brand, as people knew what he could do. But then I think the program also simultaneously took off when recruits knew that they could play in the Division III NCAA tournament. You know, so I think there was a somewhat of a limiting factor, knowing that you weren't eligible for postseason play. So, you know, for us, there wasn't a feeling of disappointment and not being able to go to the NCAA tournament, because that was never, you know, in the equation. Just the opportunity to play three more games to win the ECACs, you know, was a great capstone, you know, to a year that was basically kind of like the building block for the unbelievable success that Coach Sheehy had. You know, and I will say that I knew I wanted to be a coach. At Williams, you have something called winter study, where in the month of January, you take one class. It's pass fail. I took a coaching. I just did an independent study with Coach Sheehy, kind of put together offensive defensive philosophies, watched a bunch of, back in the day, there were VHS tapes. They weren't DVDs, and, you know, there was no streaming. Okay. So it was VHS coaching videos, but went recruiting with them, went to scout with them. And so he was, in addition to a phenomenal coach, you know, an even better mentor for me. You know, just how he went about building a program is, you know, I've had a chance to learn and watch and grow from a lot of people, but the single biggest influence on me as a coach has been and continues to be Harry Sheehy.
So right after you graduated, you got, if I'm not mistaken, maybe a year later, you got an opportunity to be a graduate assistant coach at the University of Michigan under Steve Fisher. And I'm just wondering, like, what was that experience like coaching at a high major school and a great athletic program like Michigan, but also you were coaching future NBA players. I believe there were six NBA players from that team, five or six. So just talk about that experience being a young coach.
Yeah, you know, it was a phenomenal experience. So when I was a senior at Williams, again, dating myself, typewritten, you know, the actual typewriter, you know, letters to about 200 Division I head coaches, inquiring about graduate assistant positions. And Steve Fisher was the assistant coach for Bill Frieder, and he wrote back. And I'll say this, 200 letters, probably six replies, you know.
All you need is one.
But Steve Fisher was the assistant coach, and he wrote back for Coach Frieder and said, you know, we don't have anything open, but love to have you come work camp. And I'd grown up in Wisconsin. I was out, you know, in Massachusetts. And I just kind of worked my way back. My first job out of college, I was a head high school coach at a private day school in New Jersey, taught history. But I went and worked 2 weeks at camp that summer. The following year, I was back as an assistant coach at Williams, went back to work for Coach Fisher. And then, you know, I remember the Final Four is also the coaches' convention, and it wasn't as big as it is now. And so the guys that I worked, you know, had Coach Sheehy and a couple of the other buddies from Williams were giving me a hard time. Yeah, hey, why don't you go talk to Steve Fisher? Maybe I'll hire you, right? Because they were playing for the national championship. And he was at the convention going in line to get his tickets. Again, wait, that would not happen today at the Final Four. And he came over and said hi. And that just shut Harry Sheehy up, which is probably the only time he's ever been at a loss for words. So it was pretty cool. So then after they won the national championship, I reached out to Coach Fisher and inquired about a graduate assistant position. It was a long process, but I was able to get the position. Was really a great exposure to the highest levels of Division I basketball. Staffs were smaller than what they are now. So it was three assistants and myself. So you got a chance to do a little bit of everything. Obviously not a ton of the coaching or the recruiting, but just seeing the day-to-day operations. You know, the biggest obligation I had, to be honest with you, was monitoring study table, which wasn't all that much fun. But just really breaking down film and you know, just being a fly in the wall and coaching meetings, recruiting meetings, and really saw firsthand how much you have to work, how hard you have to work if you really want to be good, you know, at your craft.
Yeah. One thing I was wondering, I was looking at that roster, and like Ruta said, there was a ton of guys that went to the NBA, but I'm also pretty sure that, like, Rob Pelinka was on that team, if I'm not mistaken. So yep. I was just wondering if, like, you still talk to any of those guys, or what's that relationship like?
You know, again, I was, like, the young guy, and I was there for 1 year, so not exceptionally well, you know, that I stayed that much in touch with the players. Although when I was at Bucknell, we played at Michigan, you know, and Mike Griffin came in to say hello, you know, and Terry Mills came back to say hello, and some of those guys, you know, so that was cool. Stayed much better to touch with the guys on that staff: Steve Fisher, Brian Dutcher at San Diego State, Jay Smith. You know, and then I left after a year when Mike Boyd, who was a top assistant, went to Cleveland State, and I went there with him as his assistant coach.
Word. So, I mean, I'm going to skip a little bit of your career. You were the head coach at St. Lawrence and Lemoyne, and this is – you hired Coach Tobin Anderson. Shout out to Coach Anderson, the head coach at Iona right now. And I want to hear about your guys' relationship, because I was in a text thread with you guys and there was constant jokes being made of each other. When Tobin was on the episode, he was saying you weren't in shape back in the day and he used to have to do double workouts because you couldn't keep up with him. But he also was saying how you were like his biggest influence on how he does things. So obviously you taught him a lot and you guys have a tight, close relationship. So just talk about you and Coach Anderson, where you guys met and, you know, what it's like today.
Well, absolutely. And we'll first start, and I hope that somebody reaches out to Coach Anderson. So Coach Anderson went to Wesleyan, and, you know, there's a longstanding rivalry called the Little Three, Williams, Amherst, and Wesleyan. And you play each team twice. Back then. Yeah, you played everyone twice.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Maybe it was only once. Yeah. So you played eight Little Three games back when we were in college, played eight Little Three games. Okay. So I want you to ask Tobin Anderson what his record was in the Little Three, because I kept seeing 0-8. Really? Tobin 0-8. You would think just one of the games, one of the good players in their team got food poisoning, got sick, sprained his ankle. Maybe you guys would have won one game in the Little Three.
He didn't get you one?
Oh, he didn't get one. He didn't get one.
So dude, I don't think he can say much if he's 0-8.
No, he was 0-8. He was 0-Little Three. Okay. In fact, when he was in college, you were thinking of kicking Wesleyan out a little three because they were so bad.
Oh, nah,
okay. Now, you know, Joe Riley's there. They're doing a great job. So that's back track. But in all seriousness, I was a head coach at St. Lawrence, and Tobin was an assistant coach at Clarkson under Walt Towns. And Walt and I became really good friends. I got to know Tobin. And just, you know, obviously, if you know Tobin, just a ton of energy, phenomenal skill development, you know, really, really good basketball mind. And so when I went to Lemoyne, I hired Tobin as one of my assistant coaches. And again, even at Lemoyne, it was Division II at the time. And I think he probably made $3,000 or $4,000 a year. That was the going rate for assistant coaches. He made $3,000 or $4,000, and Sean McDonald made $3,000 or $4,000. But you know, just he just had relentless work ethic, you know, phenomenal developing relationships with our guys. And just, you know, was a guy that challenged me, you know, on a lot of things. And that's what you want when you're head coaches, a guy who's incredibly loyal and respectful, but also challenges you to make sure that we're, you know, we're doing things the best way we can, you know, think about new ideas. And you know, and that continues today. Like, we texted back and forth. I texted him Friday night. They had a good win against Vermont. He texted me, you know, today, you know, and that's just, we're sharing ideas. The way we play is very dissimilar. Okay.
Way different.
You know, way different. And that's a little bit of a product of our different personalities, but it's also a product of where we're coaching, you know, and what is our niche in recruiting, you know, and what wins. And so, you know, but I think even though the way we go about doing things is very different, I think the philosophy and what we value is very similar. And so we talk all the time, and, you know, he in addition to being a really good coach, he's a very, very good friend.
Yeah. I like that you both have that mutual respect for each other. It didn't get lost, you know, when you guys move different spaces. But Coach Anderson, whenever you hear this, you're going to need to clarify whether you are 0-8 in the little three or not. So I'm definitely looking forward to that message. But we're going to move forward. And after Lemoyne, you coached at Williams from 2000 to 2008. And you had a career record there of 170-53, just a really, really good career at Williams. And I want to talk about one specific, like, time period. You won the national championship in 03. In 04, you guys were the national runner-up. And the class at that time period was recruited by Coach Sheehy with Crotty, Coffin. That class was really remarkable. But I was just wondering if you could talk about, you know, that almost dynasty or that dominant period you guys had. Because also I wanted to mention that, like, the offensive style that you implemented at Williams, Coach Crotty talked about it, like, it was really ahead of the curve for that time. You were doing, like, some step-up things, spacing the floor, letting Crotty get high pick and rolls, spacing the floor out on the other side. So just talk about, you know, that time period in your Williams coaching tenure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing, again, is I inherited the program from Coach Shee. So he'd been there 17 years and really set the standard for excellence and two Final Four appearances. And then he became the director of athletics. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, be his choice to succeed him. And again, Coach Sheehy was my mentor. He's my oldest daughter's godfather. You know, we talked every week as he was coaching and I was coaching. But it was unbelievable. I remember the first day I went to practice and I got the guys on the baseline to talk to him, and every guy had grabbed a piece of the jersey of the guy next to him. And that was something that he'd implemented, like, you know, just getting a piece, staying connected, you know. And I got goosebumps because I'm like, oh my God, I am inheriting a culture that is so strong and so phenomenal. It wasn't something that had to be built. It wasn't something that had to be created. You know, it truthfully, you know, the fear was, you know, I don't want to screw this up. Right. group that just played so hard and competed so hard, and it had really been built up and kind of passed down through generations. But yeah, that group, that nucleus, you know, Karate, Quaff, and ABBA, you know, three phenomenal players. It's interesting. So today I did the with our TV people, we're playing Mitchell on Wednesday. It's our home opener. It's hard for us to get home games, and we're playing a Division III team. And the commentator, you know, you're worried. And I'm like, listen, I took a Williams team down to Holy Cross and we beat them.
Yeah, I remember.
You know,
he was telling us that. Yeah.
And so he Googles it. And Karate had 22, ABBA had 21, and Coffin had 19 or 20. No, all three of those guys had more than 20 points. And so they were the three best players on the floor that night, right? But there were seniors at that point, you know, and so as freshmen, you know, we didn't go to the NCAA tournament when they're freshmen. You know, we won the ECAC, and then we went to the tournament and won a game and lost a game their sophomore year. And that's kind of like the evolution. They had to, you know, you have to learn how to compete, and then you have to learn how to win. And then junior year, won it all, and senior year, truthfully, in the national championship game, we were 15 for 30 from three and had two turnovers, and still lost to a Wisconsin Stevens Point team that was just phenomenal. And it was a heartbreaking loss. A turnaround jumper with like 4 seconds to go, and Karate actually threw the ball length of the court, went around in the hoop and out, but it wouldn't have counted because it was after the clock expired. But it was a phenomenal run with those guys. And his junior year, the year we won it, everyone in the country was doing three out, two in stuff. Like, that was the base. And we did it as well. And our leading scorer the year before had back surgery or had a back issue, and he had to miss part of the year. And he came back, and we're bringing him off the bench. And he'd been a three-man. He could really, really shoot it. But he had good size. And when we come off the bench, we take out our center, Drew DeMuth, and move Coffin to the center spot. And we went four out. And the first time we were fully healthy, able to do it, was in the NESCAC championship game. And we hit like 10 threes and a half. And it was just, you know, so going to four out spacing, you really, nobody was doing it, but it just gave us great spacing, and all four guys could shoot the three. It created more room inside for Coffin. You know, and truthfully, back then, there are very few teams using ball screens. Like, it, you know, now that's all it is, but back then it was all off ball screening and cutting. And Karate was just so good in ball screens himself. And so we just kind of evolved, you know. Sometimes, you know, I heard somebody say, you watch your kids play sometimes, and they'll show you what you got to do as a coach. And he was just so good at ball screens. Ben Koff was so good setting him, coming off him. And so we just kind of evolved because of what the talent dictated.
Yeah. Shout out to Coach Karate. He's a legend. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, like, NESCAC battles, the Amherst-Williams rivalry is really, really popular or heated. It gets intense. And you were coaching against Hall of Famer Dave Hickson. Shout out to him as well. So I'm kind of curious about what those battles were like for you going up against Coach Hickson and, like, that intense rivalry.
Yeah, it was super intense, right? Because my first two years at Williams, you know, Amherst definitely got the better of us, and they were the better team. Now they're older, but they switched everything off ball, all right? Like, they switched everything. And we ran the old conventional motion offense and stagger screens and flare screens, and we would dice people up, and then we would be like in quicksand against Amherst because they were, here's the biggest game of the year, and they're doing something different than anyone else you see. And that forced me to evolve, right? And that's why we went to more four out spacing. It's why we went to more ball screen usage. And, you know, every day in the off season, the only thought was, what do we need to do to beat Amherst? Will this recruit help us beat Amherst? Will this defensive adjustment help us beat Amherst? Will this, you know, offensive tweak help us beat Amherst? And, you know, and so the year that we won it all, we split in the regular season with Amherst. We beat them on their floor to win the conference championship. We beat them at home in the Elite Eight. And went on and won it all. The following year, we split during the regular season. We beat them at home in the conference championship. We beat them in the national semifinal game in Salem, Virginia. And I really think that win, you know, is such an emotional rivalry to play them on Friday night. And then back then, I think it's changed in Division III, but it was Friday night, Saturday afternoon, you know, even the national semifinals and championship game. And we were emotionally drained, you know, for playing Amherst. So the rivalry was heated, okay? You know, there wasn't a lot of love lost between Williams and Amherst players and coaches, but there was a ton of respect. And I had the absolute utmost respect for Dave Hickson. You know, I've had the opportunity to coach against really, really, really good coaches at all different levels. And he's as good a coach as I've ever coached against. So really happy for him. And for the game of Division III basketball that he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame, really fitting honor for Coach Hickson.
I love Coach. Shout out Coach Hickson, man. We had him on the podcast there over the summer. It was a great conversation. He's a great guy, great coach, and I love what you said about him putting a map on for Division III, getting in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rich, really impressive, right? You know, and however many years he was there, what was he, 70 or 80 years there as a coach? just really just the longevity and, you know, again, the record speaks for itself, the wins, the national championship speaks for itself. But what really speaks louder is the affection and the loyalty that the guys who played for him have, you know, and that's really at the end of the day, that's why you go into coaching. And so that's how I measure a good coach. And he's one of the absolute best.
100%, Coach. I love that you said that, because like me and KJ talked about that on our intro for that episode. We were like seeing the love, like his players made him like a 5-minute like little film of like different clips from back in the day. And we talked to Coach Aaron Toomey, who played for him. And like he like lights up every time that he talks about Coach Hickson. So you're 100% right. And especially when I love when you talk about like the competitiveness of like the Amherst and Williams rivalry, because you're right. Like, you know, when we play teams in the E8, certain teams, like there's not a lot of love there, but like it's a lot of respect for both sides.
Absolutely. And you know, again, and this is obviously your podcast speaks to it, but the level of commitment, the level of intensity, the level of coaching, the level of strategy, that's no different even if you're playing in a small gym with no ESPN audience, right?
Not at all.
Like the game is pure, and the people who do it at a high level and are about the right things can function and thrive in any environment. And so 100%, you know, and one of my most fun experiences is watching Division III NCAA tournament games.
They're unlike anything we played, man. So I've been to the tournament like my sophomore and junior year, and we played at Trinity last year, and that place was rocking, yo. Like starting lineups came out, the Trinity crowd was crazy, and it's not. You've definitely been in the Trinity gym. Yep. Like, it's really not that big, but it felt like there was like 2,000, 3,000 people in there.
Yeah. It's awesome. We had the chance, and you also like that NCAA tournament. You get to host, you know, if you have the best record in the region, you're hosting, and so we hosted, you know, the 2003, 2004, you know, all the games going up to it, and we put the tickets on sale, you know, earlier in the week, and the line was all the way, you know, Williamstown's a, you know, small town. There's like one main street, Spring Street, and people were lined up around the corner, you know, on Monday morning to buy tickets, you know, and that's a pretty cool atmosphere. for Division III.
100%, Coach. And talking about thriving in an environment, you thrived at Bucknell, and you are arguably, definitively, however you want to categorize it, you are probably the best coach that Bucknell has ever had. I mean, I'm looking at it right now, 134-94 overall record. You had 14 All-Patriot League selections, three Player of the Years. You were named the Patriot League Coach of the Year in 2010-2011 season and the 2011-2012 season. And I think the year after that, too. So I just want to hear, like, what was clicking for your staff, your teams during that time? How did you build the culture at Bucknell? Just talk about your overall, like, memories that you still cherish from that time there.
Well, I think the first thing you got to correct is, you know, Pat Flannery, who was the coach before me, took Bucknell to the NCAA tournament, and they won games in 2005 and 2006. So, you know, we had a really good run there when I was there. But, you know, Coach Flannery, you know, and certainly great coaches before him as well. But, you know, they put Bucknell and truthfully Patriot League basketball on the map, the first Patriot League team to win a game in the NCAA tournament. 2016, I think they ended up in the top 25. They were a 9 seed. You know, and I think the best we ever got was an 11 seed. Yep. When Muscala was a senior. But you know, what clicked there? Again, I had a great staff. Dane Fisher, who ended up going on to become the head coach, was with me for many, many years. He was an assistant for me at Williams, was assistant for me all 7 years at Bucknell, and maybe my first four. George Mason was at William & Mary as a head coach after that. Aaron Kelly, who was with me at Williams, was with me the entire time at Bucknell, the first 4 or 5 years at George Mason is head coach at Catholic, has them, you know, just clicking an NCAA tournament team. And then there was this other guy in staff, you know, he wasn't there very long, not a very good coach, really hasn't really amounted to much. Charles Lee, you know, who's now the head coach of Charlotte Hornets, right? And so, you know, just great guys on our staff, who most importantly knew how to work with guys on the court. You know, to me, if you're at a Bucknell and now at Holy Cross, we're getting really good players, but we're not getting one and done guys, right? And so it's really finding guys who are very good now, but have a really fierce hunger to get better. And that's identifying them in the recruiting process. It's important for the staff to know, like, what I value, and you know what, you know, not everyone is a perfect fit for me. And I'm probably not the perfect coach for every potential recruit. You know, so they did a great job there. And then just pointing to those guys on the court. And again, that was it. You know, I think we've always been solid. We were solid. We were disciplined. We were organized. We took care of the ball. We made teams take tough shots, and we rebounded and didn't foul. You know, it was simple, but it all came down to having really, really good players and guys who knew how to compete. And and so we, you know, as a collective staff, we recruited exceptionally well. And, you know, Mike Muscala just wrapped up a 12-year NBA career. But just like you said, I think, and then even when I left, my last group of freshmen was Nana Fallon and Zach Thomas and Stephen Brown. And we won the regular season their freshman year, and then they won the next three titles. And Zach Thomas and Nana Fallon took turns being named Conference Player of the Year. So, yeah, good players make good coaches. And, you know, sometimes we overcomplicate things. And it was a really, really fun time there.
So we're going to talk more about your time at Bucknell, but just a quick thought that I had. Just hearing you name some of the guys that are in your coaching tree, like Coach Anderson or Coach Lee, like, it seems like you have a pretty, like, high level coaching tree of a lot of different guys that, like, had coached under you or are now coaching, like, high level and are coaching in high level, like, programs or, you know, professional teams. So I'm just wondering, like, what do you look for in a staff? And also, like, this is for me personally too, like, how do you stand out as a candidate for, like, coaching positions?
Yeah, I mean, I've been so blessed. Like, I think that, you know, the most important thing is surrounding yourself with people who make you better, right? And who fill in your weak areas. And there's a lot of weak areas for me for these guys to fill in, you know. So, you know, but just hire really bright guys, loyal guys, hardworking guys, guys with great character, you know, and that's what I look for. You know, in many ways, like when you're coaching at a Williams and the guys made $3,000 or $4,000 and try to sneak them in the back door of the dining hall so they could eat for free. You know, you find out who really, really loves it, right? Mm-hmm. And who's really about it for the right reasons. And then as our guys have gone on and had success in their own coaching careers, you know, then they're reaching out for, you know, to give me references, to give me referrals. And so, yeah, it's just, it's, you know, I've been really, really blessed, you know, with that coaching tree. I think right now, Charles Lee, NBA head coach, Will Hardy played for me at Williams, NBA head coach. You got Ryan Frazier, an assistant in Charlotte. You got Zach Thomas, assistant in Charlotte. You got DJ McClay, who's an assistant in Boston. You got Nana Fallon, who's an assistant in Boston. You know, that's pretty cool. You got Pat Duquette, head coach at UMass Lowell. You got Tobin Anderson. You got Dwayne Simpkins, you know, at American. Josh Leffler, head coach at Loyola. So there's four or five Division I head coaches. You know, Dale Wellman won the Division III national championship. Mm-hmm. You know, at Nebraska Wesleyan. So, like we talked about, you know, Aaron Kelly, and I'm showing my age as I know I'm forgetting guys, right? And so they're just, it's just, I've been blessed, and each one of those guys, you know, has helped me, you know, and exposed me to different things. You know, Neruda, in terms of your question, how do you stand out? You know, I think number one is, you know, I think, you know, I think paying your dues and being willing to do all the grunt work and the things that nobody wants to do has always been the most important thing when you're trying to break into it. And it's less esteemed. You know, I sound like an old man, but it's the same thing I tell my daughters. You know, the concept of paying your dues is kind of a lost art, I think, with a lot of the younger generation. So a person who's willing to do go the extra mile and be early and stay late and try to be proactive and anticipate what the head coach or the other assistants might need on the staff, you know, to always be prepared, for sure. And then sometimes, you know, for me, when I'm looking to hire an assistant coach, then you're looking, in addition to that, and those are the most important things, is somebody bring a specific skill set that is really unique, maybe just a phenomenal, you know, offensive mind, you know, or maybe somebody who's worked and studied under a really good coach, like Dale Wellman. When I hired him at Williams, he had spent time as a grad assistant at Eastern Kentucky under Jeff Neubauer, who had been an assistant under John Beilein. And I wanted to learn everything about I could about John Beilein's offense, you know, and his first week on the job, I'm like, don't come out of the office. You know, again, this is back before Fast Scout and Fast Draw and all that stuff, is diagram on these diagram sheets, every aspect of the offense, right? But it might be somebody, you know, from a defensive pedigree or really good work with big guys or, you know, recruiting base or things like that. So especially now I have a larger staff, it's important finding staff balance, you know, in terms of guards and bigs or offense and defense or geographic regions where they have some strength in recruiting as well.
Coach, we definitely appreciate that advice, and we know our viewers definitely appreciate that because it could be, you know, implemented in a lot of facets of life, not just basketball. But I'm still kind of impressed about that coaching tree you just listed, and I know you're a humble guy, but that's got to be some of that credit on why you've had such an amazing coaching tree. It has to go to you. I know you don't want to say it on air, but definitely a lot of credit that has to go to you.
Well, I think the best thing that I did is like be really thorough in the searching for the best guys to work with me, you know, and just find really, really good guys who want to work hard, who are humble themselves. And then we try to have a lot of fun, right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, we're not solving world hunger. And, you know, we got to have fun. We got to work our rear ends off. We got to be prepared and organized and everything like that. But we got to have fun as well. And that's one of the neat things is just staying in touch, you know, with all these guys, you know, and some more than others, right? That's just kind of normal. But it's a really fun part of the job for sure.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be our last topic before we take a quick break, but at Bucknell, you coach Mike Muscala. You mentioned he had a 14-year NBA career and I know he played for the Thunder, which is my favorite NBA team. And I was a big fan of Muscala, but he was like, he has a case to be like one of the best Patriot League players ever. I mean, he was 2-time Patriot League player of the year. He's Bucknell's all-time leading scorer. And I want to hear about, you know, your relationship with Mike Muscala, because I was reading some articles throughout this past week and hearing him talk about playing under you. And it seemed like you guys have a really like fun, tight relationship where you were pushing him, he was pushing you. So I want to hear about, you know, coaching Mike Muscala, the recruitment process for him, and then like what that relationship is like today.
Yeah, I mean, Mike was phenomenal, and it was interesting. And again, recruiting has changed drastically. So I got the job at Bucknell and had been at Williams. And actually, Alex Lloyd, who's the head coach now at Bowdoin, he was going to be one of my assistants at Williams. You know, and again, it was like the guys were there 1 or 2 years and you try to get them a job, you know, where they actually could, you know, eat and pay for their apartment. And I got the job and I said, Alex, like, I'm sorry, but I can't hire you at Bucknell. You know, I got to hire some guys with more experience. You know, my advice to you would be do what you would do if you were going to be my assistant, and that's go work the Ivy League elite camps and go to Eastern Invitational and Hoop Group and, you know, all those types of things. And so I was going back and forth between Williamstown and Lewisburg, and he came back from one of the elite camps and he's like, Coach, I got a guy, you got to recruit at Bucknell, Mike Muscala. And so I called up Dane Fisher, who was my top assistant at Bucknell, had been with me at Williams before, who also a Minnesota native. Mm-hmm. And that's where Mike is from. I said, hey, there's this kid, Muscala. He goes, I called him last week, Coach. I'm like, all right, that's good. I know you're doing. And so Dane got us involved. I remember being in Orlando. The big AU thing used to be in Orlando, showcase, and the AU Nationals were a big deal. And we're looking at, we really need a big kid. And this kid's got 6 high majors offering him. And this kid, and I'm like, oh my God, this kid Muscala is better than any of these guys. So I booked a flight to Minnesota. I left the event, watched him with his high school team, which you can't do anymore. You know, playing with not good players in an open gym, but score with his right hand, left hook, left hand jump hook. I'm like, that's it. I saw 5 minutes. I'm like, I want that kid, and offered him a scholarship on the spot. And you know, he really didn't have a lot of high level recruitment. And so he came up for an official visit, unofficial visit in August, right when I kind of moved my family into town. We thought we were done. We thought the family was going to leave. We're kind of wrapping up meeting with my staff. He came back in the office and said, Coach, I want to come to Bucknell. It was unbelievable. That's tough. You know? And then I remember watching him play in the state tournament. We lost, you know, we'd been eliminated. We didn't have a good first year at Bucknell. Went out to watch him play in the state tournament. And I'm like, oh my God, this kid is good. You know? And I can admit it now. I desperately wanted his team to lose. I did not want them to keep playing and for people to find out about that kid. You know, he was skinny when he got to Bucknell, but he was fiercely competitive. like just fiercely competitive. And I remember Tim Sweeney was on that first staff, the head coach at Kyle College.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Great things at Hobart. See, I'm telling you, the guys I forgot is just because I'm old and it's way past my bedtime too. But
don't worry, we'll get you out of here soon.
Yeah, but I remember Aaron Kelly saying Tim Sweeney had then left and gone back to Elon, and after one of our practices, you know, where Muscala was just doing things that you're like, wow, saying I wonder if that's what those guys at Davidson thought when they had Steph Curry there. You know, I just remember, and it was his freshman year, and you're like, wow, we got something. And then, you know, a two-time player of the year, just a phenomenal, phenomenal player. You know, every year we'd give him two or three things to work on. I just don't believe in giving a guy a bunch of things. His sophomore year, he was a player of the year. He averaged 7 rebounds a game. I remember going to talk to NBA scouts. I'm like, I don't know, but I think maybe this kid might be able to play in the NBA. I remember an NBA scout telling me, he's got to average 1 rebound for every 3 minutes he plays. And I tell him that translates to the NBA. I'm like, hey, Mike, you got to average 1 rebound for every 3 minutes you play. Next year, he played 31 minutes a game. He averaged 11 rebounds, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just we talked about improving his assist-to-turnover ratio. We talked about, you know, all these things, and he just attacked it. And also was an academic All-American. Double major in Spanish and business management. And Mike and I remain close. You know, I had a milestone birthday. I don't really like to announce what year it was. And my daughter got a hold of, I was out to take a run and she got my phone contacts and she just tried to reach out to some people very quickly to put together like a video for me, you know, and Mike was in there and, you know, it's just great. Like, so we talk quite a bit and his really, really good friend and teammate, Bryson Johnson, is my associate head coach. So, just a phenomenal human being and, you know, what a great NBA career for sure.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to Mr. Muscala, wonderful career, just retired. So good for him. I know the retired life must be good for him. And let's take a quick break, come back, talk about, you know, the rest of your career in Holy Cross basketball.
And we're back with the Not Even D2 podcast here with Coach Paulson. So talking about another high level player that you had at one of your programs that you were coached for. I want to talk about Tyler Kolek. Now, Tyler Kolek, I'm a New England guy. I grew up in Exeter, right? And I went to like a NEPSAC school. So like I was at those zero gravity like high school tournaments and I saw Tyler Kolek play. And he was playing for St. Andrews at the time. And really I only saw him play one time, but from what I saw, he was just gunning threes out there. Like he was just shooting threes and he would make the occasional like no look pass. But really he was playing the two for
Middlesex, I think St. George's.
St. George's, yeah, St. George's and the Middlesex Magic. So you recruited Tyler Kolek at George Mason. And I'm just wondering, like, what did you see from him? And was there an expectation that he was going to reach the heights he has?
Well, if what I saw on him, you know, and obviously he played for St. George's for Dwayne Pina, who was a good friend of mine, and then obviously played AU for Mike Crotty. You know, and so he's, you know, going into his junior year, Crotty's like, hey coach, I got a guy, like, I really think he can play at your level. And you know, one of my assistants saw him and he's like, he's really close. Like, I think we should take a look at him. And I remember going to watch him play. We're going to play at Rhode Island. You know, this is when I was at George Mason. We're going to play at Rhode Island. I think it was maybe even a Sunday game, like a TV game. And they had a Saturday, you know, they had a Saturday afternoon game, St. George's did. And he had a sprained ankle. So it was mammoth, right? It was my first time seeing the kid in person, you know, maybe in January. So he didn't shoot the ball well in that game, but I'd watch film of him. I knew he could really, really shoot it. Though that particular game, because he couldn't move, what I did notice, one, elite rebounder, for his size, like a really, really good defensive rebounder. And then that game, and maybe that's not what he'd done all the time, but he passed that ball so well in his vision. And I already knew he could shoot. I'm like, oh my God, this kid could really pass it. You know, now that did I think he'd end up being the national point guard of the year and, you know, go to the NBA with the Knicks. You know, I mean, you never know, but I knew that he could be an elite player in the A-10. You know, we're the only school at the time. We were the first school to offer him, you know, at that level. And I told Crotty, I don't want to offer him yet because I don't want all the other guys in the league to find out about him. He's like, nah, you'll be all right. And, but, you know, his summer that he played with the Middlesex Magic and also like the NEPSAC recruiting event, you know, I just did that. Like I watched every one of his games. Like I'm like, I probably watched 80% and I had assistant at the other 20%. I'm like, we are going to watch every single game he plays and I'm going to be there the vast majority and nobody's going to work harder to recruit that kid. And that's how much I believed in him, you know, and I knew he was going to start and he was a rookie of the year for me as a freshman. And obviously we didn't have, you know, it was a weird year because it was a COVID year. So we didn't have a full summer and we didn't, you know, play a full season. But you know, his year for me, he was more of a combo because we needed him to score, you know, and he was going to transition to being a full-time point guard, you know, as we got a little more scoring in the next recruiting classes. But it's been super fun to watch his success and stay in touch with him. And, you know, when he comes back to Rhode Island, he usually comes over to Holy Cross and works out because Bryson Johnson was my assistant at George Mason as well. So he and TK are really close. And so, you know, he came by this summer, you know, right after the draft and he came back last summer and, you know, really cool to just follow his progress.
He's definitely, I mean, from all accounts, I've heard he's a great dude and he's a really good player, man. And it's definitely crazy. And to see where he's taking it, you know what I'm saying? And he really bet on himself when he committed to Marquette too, like after he got in the transfer portal. I mean, he was A-10 rookie of the year, but still regardless, he's playing at a Power 5 level with the Big East.
Coach, yeah. I wanted to talk about that. So when he entered, more just like a general question, but when players are having that type of success under you, but you know, they're trying to increase their stock or get more NBA scouts on them, what's those conversations like from your perspective? Like, were you trying to tell them like you should stay at George Mason because I feel like we can help you?
I mean, so he wasn't going anywhere. And then I was let go at George Mason.
Yeah.
So he wasn't going to leave. George Miller wasn't going to leave. Joshua Duro wasn't going to leave. Like we were poised to have a real breakthrough year. And you know, it was a first year president and things happen. Right. And that's the bad part of the business. So I don't think he wasn't going anywhere. He was happy. He had a huge role. He was rookie of the year. You know, so I haven't had that, you know, truthfully. And I hope we've got really, really good freshmen here at Holy Cross. So I hope I'm not having those discussions either, but you know what, it's a different landscape. And I think the biggest thing that I would tell those guys is, you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, right? And you got to make sure that you know what you're getting into in terms of the coaches, in terms of the guys that are going to be in the locker room with you, in terms of what your role is going to be. You know, part of the reason I'm the head coach at Holy Cross now is that, you know, Holy Cross under the previous coach, under Coach Nelson, had the rookie of the year, Kyrell Luke.
And he
transferred to Bonnies. And last year he played about 2 minutes a game.
That's how it goes.
And he would have been a, you know, two or three time all-conference player at Holy Cross. He's on his third school. And he's not going to have a Holy Cross degree. You know, and so, you know, that's the cautionary tale. And so I just think, you know, my thing to the guys that we have now is like, listen, you can get to the NBA, you know, from the Patriot League, right? You know, Mike Muscala got to the NBA from the Patriot League, and CJ McCollum, you know, and those two were at the same class. If you're good enough, you can get to wherever your goals are. It's better to be in a situation where you're put in a position to take the game-winning shot on a Wednesday, and if you miss it, coach still calls your number on Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Where you know you can play through mistakes, where you have a relationship with your coach, where you can have honest discussions at the end of the year, say, hey, here's how we can together expand your game and prepare you for that. And so, you know, I guess I'm a little old school, but I think if you're in a situation where you're happy, where you're comfortable, where you know what you're allowed to do and where you can continually try to expand your role, I think the vast majority of guys are better off for that. You know, and certainly things worked out great for Tyler. But I'm just as confident that it worked out really, really great for him if he and I had stayed together at George Mason.
Definitely great sound advice from you, Coach, right there about, you know, grass not always being greener. It's 100%, you know, a great point. And, you know, talking more about recruiting, you know, we, KJ and I listened to an interview, a couple interviews with you, and one of them, the Field of 68 interview, you told a story about Duncan Robinson. And basically the story goes is that you got a call from Coach Crotty. Obviously, shout out Coach Crotty. You got a call from Coach Crotty like, hey, I got this kid on my AAU team. He's really good. He could shoot the piss out the ball. You got to come see him. And you saw him play, and he was shooting the piss out the ball, but he was really skinny and couldn't defend, but you really liked him. And you wanted to take a chance on him and offer it, but some of your staff at the time was telling you, like, I don't know about him. And he ended up going to Williams and then playing Division I. But you said in that interview that that's a cautionary tale and that, like, you should have trusted your gut and taken a risk and recruited him. So I'm wondering now, like, how do you employ your staff to take that same mindset? And how do you balance taking risks with a recruit, but also trying to fit positional needs on your team?
Yeah. And so that it's interesting, actually, the guy that Crotty wanted me to recruit was another kid on his team. Right. Mm-hmm. And so even early on, Crotty didn't know how good Duncan Robinson was going to be because I watched a lot of the games looking at the other kid. I'm like, oh my God, this skinny dude shoots the absolute crap out of the ball. And a great feel, but I mean, he was really skinny and he couldn't cover his bed, right? I mean, but we needed a foreman, you know, and we took a foreman, and all along I'm like, I think Duncan Robinson would be a great player. We didn't need his position because, you know, who needs another NBA superstar, right? I mean, and so to me, I probably err on the side of get really good players and figure it out. And I don't do enough, you know, probably at from time to time I should go for that positional need. But I just think, gosh, if you put five really good players, smart, skilled, tough, with a gym rat mindset, we can figure out a way to guard the other teams. And so, you know, that's still what I value. And I really value skill and I really value like character.
Yeah. I had one specific question about like a player on your team, DeAndre Williams. Like his brother played at Quinnipiac, was a great player. And DeAndre, I know him because one of my good teammates is like from the same town in Beacon, New York. And he told me like DeAndre wasn't really getting many Division I looks coming out of high school, but you guys offered him and he took a chance with you guys and you guys probably took a chance with him. And now he's been playing big minutes for you guys last year and this year too.
Yeah. So it's interesting, like DeAndre. So I got the job in the spring and DeAndre played for PSA for Munch, you know, and he's like, I got a guy. I'm telling you, this guy can play. And you know, he had been at St. Benedict's. He'd done the year there and you know, watch film and he looked fine, but not great, right? But fine. And we were looking at this guy and this guy and this guy. And I'll say this, Munch just kept like harassing me. And I'm like, hey, like the one thing now that you can do is you do an open tryout. And I'm like, we brought in a kid who had 7 or 8 Division I offers for an official visit. And we had DeAndre come up and play that same day. And DeAndre kicked the ever living crap out of that other kid, who had all the measurables, you know, and all that. And at the end, I was like, all right, Trey, you're going to have to give me a couple of days to unwind this. And we kind of backpedaled a little bit from the other kid and offered DeAndre a scholarship. And you know, it's interesting to say, like, you know, you said, what's your day to day? And I grabbed DeAndre because, you know, like Saturday against Brown, he played 20 minutes or so. But, you know, he didn't play a ton down the stretch. And even a year ago, that might have impacted him a little bit, but he was just locked in on the bench. He was fired up. We did some offense, defense stuff because he's a really good defender. And yesterday in the second half, I could not take him off the floor. I would not take him off the floor because he just played at an elite defensive level. And we were not sharp defensively. And I told him today, like, how proud and thrilled I was of him, you know, and that's a great testament. You know, if we hadn't offered him, I think he was going to, I can't remember what Division II school.
I think it was, I mean, I don't know. Delphi. He had a Delphi. They liked him a lot. That's what I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was going to go to a Division II, you know, and it's, you know, it's, he just continues to grow and get better. And it's fun to see, you know, and you know, that's what I like. I like the guy, I like the underdog, and I like the guy with the chip on his shoulder who has something to prove.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good story. I love those growth stories. Like I heard this quote from somebody, like, the more you're being output instead of input focus is when things go wrong. But when you start like being internally, you'll start to see like that rise and that growth. And that's a true story about it. But I mean, this is going to be the last question before we move on to rapid fire. And last year, Holy Cross was 10-23. And 6-12 in the Patriot League, not your best year coaching. This year you guys are 3-2. Like we talked about those 3 wins this past weekend. And I noticed, well, Ruta pointed this out to me, that there's only one senior on the roster. So what should we expect from, you know, Holy Cross moving forward with only one senior, a young group, and playing in a competitive league like the Patriot League?
Yeah, like right now we're starting 3 freshmen. Max Green, who was a freshman like guard from the Louisville, Kentucky area. He was a Patriot League and rookie. He was Patriot League player and rookie of the week this week. He had 25 points first night and averaged about 17, I think. Our point guard, Tyler Boston, who's from the DMV area. He was the MVP of the tournament at Brown. You know, played 35, 36 minutes a game at the point guard spot. And then Aiden Richard, a freshman from San Antonio, Texas, he guarded Brown's Keno Lilly, who might be the preseason, you know, player of the year in the Ivy. Yeah. And he did a great job. Now Lilly still had 24, but man, he had to work for it. And then Aiden hit the game winning shot the other day. So, you know, really love those freshmen. We got a couple transfers that are young as well. So we have one senior on the roster who plays, and we have one junior, but it's a community college transfer. So like we really have one guy with more than 1 year of college experience. We've got good depth. I really love the culture of these guys. They're competitive. They're working hard. And I think we showed, you know, what we could do. We led Wisconsin at the half. We were leading Rhode Island for 32 minutes on the road, and just kind of wore down, right? And just the athleticism, the length, the size, the pressure. But 3 good wins this weekend. You know, the one thing with young team, like we're probably going to be inconsistent. I hope I'm wrong. You know what I say is, you know, you're allowed to be consistent in your performance. You're not allowed to be consistent in your effort, your energy, your coachability, your buy-in into the process. But I think, you know, as the year goes on, I'm optimistic that I know we'll be a better team than we were last year, because I know what I see every day in practice, and I know the culture and the coachability of this group. How much better, you know, remains to be seen. But I really love the potential of this group for this year. And then certainly, you know, really, really excited about, you know, what that group can do moving forward.
Yeah, what you described, like leading Wisconsin at the half, leading for 32 minutes of the game, that's like a clear indication that you have a young group, and that's only going to continue to develop when they get that experience of, you know, playing on the road, or, you know, how to play in crunch time. That's all freshman stuff that they're the quicker that they can adapt to that, the quicker that Holy Cross will be back on top in the Patriot League for sure. But we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. Let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
All right. So what's this? I you may have sent it to me, but I didn't really look at it. I'm going to be honest. So what?
All right. So the rapid fire is Ruta's just going to ask you three questions and you're not going to know what they are. And then the starting five edition is going to be, if you were a coach assembling a lineup, who would your lineup be? And I'll give you like what the topic is when we get to it. So we'll start with rapid fire.
All right, you just train me. Okay, you got it.
All right, let's do it. So first rapid fire question: funniest players that you've ever coached?
Wow! Oh wow! Funniest. I've had a lot of fun. Oh man. Funniest player I ever coached.
You can give like one to two, three. If it's
well, Mike Muscala was a pretty funny player. Mm-hmm. Mike Crotty, for sure.
Yep.
Funny slash smart ass. I would go there. Bryson Johnson. We'll go those three.
It's a good group.
Okay, I like those. I like that group. Next rapid fire question. I just want to hear Coach Paulson's theme song. Like, what are some songs that, like, you live by and, like, you're like, these are my songs and I'll ride or die for these songs. I don't know.
All right. Well, you got to go Thunder Road with Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We could go anything with Billy Joel.
That's your boy.
Yeah. Eagles. So pretty much anything 80s, but you know, if it's going to be one and done, it's going to be Thunder Road from the Boss.
Gotcha. I like that. And then last rapid fire question. This is kind of I'm interested to hear your answers. So you've won like national championships. You've been to the NCAA tournament, right? Like, I want to know like your most memorable year coaching basketball and which one that was.
There's going to be a few, you know, I'd have to say, I would say winning the national championship 2002-2003 season, you know, was certainly has got like nothing exceeds that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, winning, Muscala and Johnson's senior year. So we won the league. Their sophomore year went to the NCAA tournament. Their junior year, we won their league and then got knocked off by Lehigh in the championship game. We went on and defeated Arizona in the NIT. They beat Duke, right? But in the next year, like, we were going to potentially have the best team in the history of Bucknell basketball, but so was Lehigh. And the chance to, like, have that good a team and not go to the NCAA tournament. And so the whole year we coached and played under this like enormous pressure. There's no more pressure than being the best team in a one bid league. Cause you got like, you can't screw up one time. And to win the Patriot League championship and to win the, you know, the Patriot League tournament and go to the NCAA tournament again, was incredibly memorable. And then truthfully, I will say, and it, you know, it ended in a bad way when I was let go, but my last year coaching at George Mason, you know, coaching where guys had to wear gaiters and pull them up and wear, wear masks and that group achieved as close to the potential as they could have. They had fun. We had a close-knit group in like really adverse circumstances, you know, and something that we loved was in danger of being taken away from us. And so I think that group really embraced being in the gym and being together, even though we were socially distanced for that year. And so that was a memorable year, not for, you know, winning phenomenal games, but just like, you know what, we're lucky to get to do this together.
So before we move to the starting five, was the year that you were talking about you guys were supposed to be the best and Lehigh was also going to be good, was CJ McCollum on that team?
He was a senior, yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's a crazy CJ McCollum versus Mike Muscala. That's a tough matchup.
I mean, you know, and so that's like, you know, in any other time, you know, we probably win three consecutive titles to go to the NCAA tournament, and so does Lehigh. Right. You know, like how many times are you going to have an NBA player on two different teams in the same league? So it was really, really a phenomenal league.
Yeah. So we're going to move to the starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition, I'm sorry, coach, this is hard, but the best players you've coached. So like, point guard through center, you got to build your lineup of all the players you've coached and just the best talent.
Wow. Okay. Center, Mike Muscala. Mm-hmm. So I got to put a caveat here because I'll never get a freaking player for the Middlesex Magic if I don't put Mike Crotty as a point guard. But he also deserves to be the point
guard. Yeah, I was going to say he might still be your best point guard.
Yeah. Oh, shit. No, I can't do that. Sorry. I got Tyler Kolek. So, no, forget it. Crotty, you're coming off the bench. Crotty's coming off the bench. See, this is the thing. All right, Tyler Kolek's the point guard. Mike Muscala's the five. Joe Willman, my four-man at Bucknell, is the four-man. Smartest player I ever coached. Jordan Miller's the three.
That two guard.
Two guard. Ooh, this is tough. Best players I ever coached. All right, now, but this is really, we're going to have to go with two point guards. We're going to go Otis Livingston from George Mason. We're going to go small. All right, Otis and Tyler Kolek in the backcourt. We're going to go Jordan Miller. Jordan Miller. Now, I'm going to say this because I didn't coach him for all 4 years. So Joe Willman, I coached for all 4 years. He gets a slight nod over Josh Aduro because I only coached Josh for three. That's how I'm going to do it. And then we're going to go Muscala at the five.
I mean, that's a crazy line. That's really tough.
That's a pretty good line. The guys who didn't make it, Cameron Ayers was a player of the year in the Patriot League. He didn't make it, right? Crotty didn't make it. Coffin didn't make it. Those are two of the best players to ever play Division III basketball. Yeah, a lot of really, really good players that didn't make it. But so many guys you can play. You got to put the guys who make the NBA. You probably got to put them on the line. Right.
I feel that. Well, Coach, this has been a really good conversation. That's going to do it for another episode. I'm not even D2. We definitely appreciate it. It's 10:45 right now, and I know that's way past your bedtime. So we appreciate your time and your great knowledge you gave us throughout this episode, and good luck to you for the rest of the year.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed talking about hoops with you guys.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.